You know, it's been hard. It's been hard adjusting to this, adjusting to not doing everything for myself. And I have to admit, it's going to be equally hard. I've gotten kind of used to it and kind of like it. It's going to be equally hard going back to, you know, having to carry my own Bible, carry my own cup of coffee. Molly even has to carry my coffee because it's slosh everywhere. That's going to be rough. It's good to be back with you, brethren. Welcome to winter. Thanks for the cold welcome. It reminds me of a year ago. Does this happen every year about this time like this? Wow. Interesting. But we're thankful. We're blessed. It's warm in here. And glad to be back with you, brethren. Glad for visiting, brethren, also. Finding us and being here for this study. We're in Ephesians chapter 5. I'd like someone to read the key verse that sums up the whole letter. And it might be a good reminder for us. When you think of Ephesians, if you can think of this key verse, it comes right in the middle. Right in the middle of the letter. And it sums up the first half and the second half. And if you can remember the one verse, it'll give you a good feel for what the letter is about. So what's the verse in the middle? Brother Ken?
It's chapter 4, verse 1.
And read that for us.
Therefore, I, the prisoner of the Lord, implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called.
All right. He's about to address this worthy walk. We're not just to walk any way we feel. And walk is really a metaphor. It's a figure to talk about what? What's he mean by your walk? Jamie?
Relationships.
It's in various relationships. When you walk, it's really trying to say what?
Progress through life.
Okay, progress through life. That's right. A walk is a progress. In very simple terms,
how we live our lives.
How you live your life, or your conduct, or your lifestyle, your walk. But it's called a walk because it's like Brother Matt was saying, it's progress. It's not just occasionally doing something right. That's not a walk. It might be a step, but it's not a walk. A walk is something steady, and it's consistent, and it's going forward. And so it's always progressing. So remember that as you live as a Christian, it is to be a growth, and it's to be steady. It's not just to be, occasional step in doing what's right, and then just a whole bunch of false steps or just stop walking. You know, so I take a step, hey, this is good, and then I stop. You know, I don't continue even with that same good habit or good action. So think about that as you live as a Christian. And only that is worthy of how you've been called and what you've been called to. So you've been called by God's grace, His great favor, His great love, the salvation He offers you, and you're being called to glory. That's not what you see in this life. You see a lot of hardship, burdens, twisted ankles, and that's mild compared to a lot of other hurt, a lot of emotional hurt and spiritual hurt. We don't see the glory right now, but that's what we're called to. And so I'm talking about a high calling, and it deserves a worthy walk. And Jamie, back to you. This walk takes place in various relationships. And so we've been addressing each relationship like the one body. Who are you related to when we talk about the one body? To whom does that relate you? Again, Jamie. Uh-oh. Just because he's been a good student, good answer, now I'm picking on him. Uh-oh.
Amongst the brethren.
Right. Fellow believers, with all fellow believers, that relationship. And we've talked about a relationship we have with the Godhead. I say Godhead, why? Matthew?
The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Right, because each person, all three, are addressed specifically in the letter and addressed in relation to the Christian, so with the Godhead. And now, in chapter 5, we've been studying what relationship last week?
Marriage.
Okay, marriage and specifically?
We started with the wife.
All right, the wife to the husband. So let's just quickly relate and review that. The duty that's mentioned here is submission. So someone read verses 22 through 4. 22 through 24, John Manette, please. 22, 3, and 4.
From 5:22. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being a savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be to their husbands in everything.
Okay, thank you. So, submitting, which in very practical terms means obeying. What is being submitted? Do you know what you're submitting? What is the wife submitting to the husband? That might help to say, what do you submit?
Your authority.
Yeah, authority, something like that. You're putting your authority under his. Right. What is something else that's involved in submission? You're right, authority.
Will.
Will. That's a good point. Your will, which amounts to what you want to do or how you would choose to do. Well, just everything about your life. You're willing to submit your will to his will. And that helps. It doesn't mean that you no longer have any desires or even any good ideas or even better ideas than his. It may actually be a better idea or a better judgment. And that's what you need to think through. That's where submission is really tested. I think, the wife might say, I think that this might work better. For example, in the kitchen, especially her area of expertise, or just anywhere in the house. I think this would work better. And yet the husband says, no. Or it might come to this. She says, I think we need to pay $100 more for this model because it's going to last twice as long. And he says, no, I'm willing to go with the cheaper model right now. I'm looking at the dollar sign and I'm looking at these other bills. And we're going to go with the cheaper model. And we'll just see if we can make it last a little bit longer. She may have actually had the better judgment about that. But she submits. She submits as a bottom line to his choice about that. And like often works out, we husbands kind of learn the hard way. And we learn after time, you know, honey, you were right. This thing broke after half the time I expected. Half the time. About the quarter of a time that yours probably would have. And if we're good husbands, we would do well to admit that from time to time. To let her know, you know, I do value your judgment. Next time, I'm going to listen a little better. We would do well to let her know that. And talking about that same little scenario right there, the wife would be wise to refrain at that point from saying what? When he says, yeah, that's it, Marcia.
I told you so.
That's not what either husbands want to hear or need to hear. That doesn't encourage us to, well, take the lead like we're supposed to. There's things about taking the lead that are unpleasant. Just like taking the responsibility when the thing does break before we wanted it to. That's no fun for it to all fall on, you know, the man. So again, that little scenario is how things can work, and that's just taken from everyday life. So you're submitting to his authority, you're submitting your will, your own desires, what you would want just done at a certain time and place, to his. And notice there are two qualifications in the passage. I have them both together. In all things, you submit in all things, and you submit as to the Lord. That was said of slaves. Look at chapter 6 and verse 5. Who will read that? 6 and 5. Billy?
Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, who fear the fear and trembling and the sincerity of the heart that sold to Christ.
Okay. Slaves are submitted to masters as to Christ, just as they would submit to Christ. Of course, he's addressing slaves who became Christians, which is just amazing. And this is the best thing that could happen to them. For one thing, they now they have a real future. in heaven, even if this life still calls for hardship. Number two, they have God's help in this life. They have God's blessings, God's help to do a hard lifestyle. Number three, they have a new attitude. They have a new attitude about what they do. What's this attitude? Matthew.
Everything they do is for God.
Right. And what effect does that attitude have on a person?
They'll do a better job and they'll be more pleased about what they do.
That's it. More pleased. Basically happier. When before they were a Christian, it's drudgery. And it's not a happy lifestyle. Now they have more of a positive attitude about things because of this teaching and this viewpoint. And they really are doing it for Jesus. And Jesus is finding credit with that. Like Peter says, this finds credit with God when you suffer unjustly. Jesus is taking note of that. And once again, when you think about their situation, you think of many unfair, unkind situations in daily life. And yet they will submit to it like submitting to Christ. Again, sometimes, especially those in the world, the wife considers submission to any husband, any wife to any husband, they just consider it unfair. That's the world's viewpoint. But consider this. If slaves are told to submit as they would be submitting to Christ, how much easier should it be for wives? Who, after all, they married this man who was head over heels, you know, with you. Not a master that says, you look like a strong piece of working equipment. I'll buy you a slave. I'll buy you. No. After all, he spoke kindly to you. I know things can change, but but overall, you can still appeal to that. And he can too. Remember how you felt about me? Oh, yeah. So, my quick parallel is, if the slave can submit like to the Lord, certainly a wife can submit to a husband. And find that a whole lot easier to do. And again, unto the Lord. Because in this point, after all, it's because of her submitting to Christ that she's willing now to take this approach toward her husband. Now, when it said in all things, let me comment on this just briefly. Paul did not obviously mean to take that in an absolute sense. All things, as even if he makes you, even if he commands you to break a command of God, or if he asks you to sin, Paul's not considering that. This is his way of saying what? Submit in all things. Not just what? Merely. Not just what things? Okay.
That you're willing to, you have to be submitting to things that you don't want to.
Okay, thank you. So not just things that the wife already, you know, wants to do. Or how else would you put that? Not just
easy.
Okay, the easy things. Right. Sure, honey. I already want to do that. right. So in everything is what he's trying to say. Even when it's not as pleasant, or it's not what you preferred, or your option, as it were. And we can do this, and it is God-honoring. It is God-honoring, and God finds appreciation for that. And then lastly, actually, before I get to this point, I want us to turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. Last time we discussed the difficulty of a wife submitting to a husband who is not a believer and who may even make demands of her, like I had talked about earlier, the husband is not to command her to do something against God's will or to make her sin. And so we brought up the situation where this unbeliever may try to forbid her to attend assemblies. A very practical application of that. And we tried to say, What was the best response that a woman should take toward that kind of a demand? What should the Christian woman's response be when he were first to bring that up? I don't want you to attend assemblies anymore. Pretty extreme. That's a pretty extreme, you know, abusive husband. I say extreme in terms of demands. It's not physical abuse, but that's an extreme. What should the Christian wife's response be? Jamie.
Well, last time we talked about respectfully appealing to the husband and their conduct.
Right. She respectfully appealing to him. Like about what? What could she appeal to?
Well, we talked about like her behavior and how important it is to her.
Okay. So her behavior needs to be consistent. She can't be this woman who's not living as a Christian in various areas, being very weak as a wife, like shirking her duties. And then she says, but I've got to go to church services. You've got to let me go to church services. And he's saying, why? You don't live like a Christian the rest of the week. And he's got a point. So again, if you or the wife are going to be able to make this appeal to him that this is unreasonable, I really cannot submit to that, then you need to be showing it consistent. He needs to see that in your life, he knows that your faith toward God and your love for God is first. It has to come first. You've been showing that consistently. Furthermore, you've been showing, for example, that you love him and that you have been serving him, serving his needs, taking care of the home, being diligent. You can appeal to that and to say, honey, this is unreasonable. You know everything. You know every other way that I've been showing my love for you and taking care of you. So that's the key to being able to handle that kind of unreasonable demand on his part. Be consistent and let him see how it is truly one of your priorities and not just something like wanting an excuse to be out of the home, you know, for an hour, 2 hours on Sunday and an hour on Wednesday. He can see through that. Oftentimes a husband makes that kind of demand not because he thinks the wife is doing something wrong by going to church services. I'm trying to put a positive spin on his demand. It's not because he really thinks this is better for you to stay home. You know why husbands often make that when they do make that kind of demand? What's going on in their thinking? And I'm saying, if you understand it, that's how you can appeal to him and help him with it. What's he thinking, Mary Lee?
Feeling insecure.
Yes, right. And feeling what? By the husband, by the wife's conduct? Feeling condemned?
Or rejected. Afraid that, you know, I mean, if he's a non-believer, he doesn't want her loving anybody more than him.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, I see what you say. That's right. By even God, you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
I would agree with that. I've seen some aspects of jealousy involved, you know, from my perspective.
No, right.
So I agree with Mary Lee.
Yeah, and even like the wife spending time with other Christians, maybe that, instead of just with him, right? So, once again, what's the wife's response if it is jealousy? What's her response? It doesn't mean that she can change his heart like flipping a switch, but what does she do to help?
She can invite him to come.
Right. Yeah, and you know, we mentioned that last week. She can invite him to come. That's right. Honey, you can be a part of this same, you know, fellowship that we enjoy with each other. And I know there are wives that wish that unbelieving, I say wife, it's more often that way than the other. The believing husband and an unbelieving wife. I'm just talking about the averages. In a gospel meeting in South Carolina, where I was 4 weeks ago. By the way, this is 4 weeks ago where this happened. That's how I can remember. There was a lady sitting in about the second or third pew, right up front, attentive. My wife got to know her, and she was married to an unbeliever. And she says, my greatest desire is for my husband to become a Christian. She married him, again, while not a Christian. She was a Christian, he was not. It was their first marriage, and later in life, they were like in their early 50s. And she even told him, if there were anything to do over again in my marriage, it would have had to do with you becoming a Christian first. She says, I still love you, and he knows it. He knows it, she shows it. There's no question there. But she told him once, if there were anything I would do over about our marriage, it would be working with you more until you'd become a Christian. She says, even now, that's the only thing in this life that I want. It's what I want most in this life. And she says, I often picture you as, well, sitting beside me in the assembly, taking part just like the men do, the different men up front, as they lead prayer or read scripture or teach or wait at the table. She says, I picture you being there too.
That's probably not very encouraging to him. Most non-Christians, the last thing they want to think about is having to get up in front of the whole congregation.
Yeah, well, you might have a point there, right? That's just from her perspective, right? She said, that's what I long for you. And we all ought to know it's not about, you know, the husband being up front. It's about him knowing the Lord and having the Lord in his life. So there she is, and I appreciate that she openly expresses that kind of desire, and that's what's most important, and that she continues to work, try to work on him and with him. But, you know, she'll say, there's no question about our love for each other. That's unquestioned. And he's not the type that tries to hinder her or put any pressure on her about the practice of her faith. So look at 1 Peter 3. Someone read just verse 1 and 2. 1 Peter 3, 1 and 2. Who has that? All right, Matthew?
In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior.
To begin with, this is a chapter division we put in the letter. And verse 1 says, in the same way. What's he referring to? In the same way as what? Just before. In the same way as?
What's Christ suffered for us.
Okay, the supreme example of Christ. Uh-huh. He submitted to all lost sinners to die for them. He submitted to the Father's will in order to come to this earth, live and die for us. He submitted to what specifically in this example? What did he submit to specifically? What kind of treatment?
Well, it mentions he was being reviled back in verse 23.
Right. Unfair. Just basically unfair abuse. Being reviled, being threatened, and yet he did not return in kind, just like that. And really, what other relationship, even before bringing up the example of Christ, what relationship had he been talking to that he says, likewise, wives? What relationship?
Relationship to Christ.
Are you thinking back in verse 18?
Yes, 18. Slaves. Servants, be submissive to your masters. So this whole section. And then before that, what other relationship is about submission in 1 Peter 2?
Submitting to governmental.
That's right. Verse 13. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake. You see, that's the key. Because of your attitude and looking toward Him. Submit to every human institution. Every level of human authority is what he brings up. Submit. And then verse 18, servants be submissive. Likewise, wives be submissive. And just like with servants, it's not only verse 18, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable, unfair, froward, the old King James. And so likewise with wives, submit not only to Christian husbands, but even to those who are disobedient to the word. And what is the key to possibly winning them? That means winning to the Lord. What's the key in the wife in possibly winning him to the Lord? Yes. And not necessarily her. He says, verse 1, they may be won without something. Right. Right. And probably, he's not just talking about talking in general, but without preaching or teaching directly. Teaching them directly what they need to do and be. How might they maybe won? Even without a word, by the behavior of their wives. And then he describes that behavior in two key terms. What's that behavior? Verse 2, Mary Lee.
Chaste and respectful.
Okay, chaste and respectful. So she keeps herself to him in sexual relations. He knows that. He fully trusts her in that area. No question there. And she's not flirtatious. That's also part of this chaste attitude. She doesn't flirt. Let alone the actual sin of adultery. You know? So, he knows that. He observes that. And also, her respectful behavior. Or, literally, a behavior with fear. And I believe it's the idea of godly fear. She's showing, again, godly fear in her behavior. Verse 3, let's read this, and I'll give you the key of what he's going to say. He uses the term adornment. To adorn is to make something appear beautiful. So, it's like something starts out plain, and then you adorn it, and you make it beautiful. Let's see, guys do that with their motorcycles. It comes new enough. But they buy all kind of chrome parts and add to it. So they're adorning it. Same thing with their cars. You trick them out. Okay. So what I'm trying to say is you put something extra on it and it makes it look better. To make it look beautiful. And look what the woman's adornment is really about. Look what really makes her look beautiful. Someone read 3 and 4. Who has that? Verses 3 and 4. Yes, please.
Your adornment must not be merely external braiding the hair or wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit which is precious in the sight of God.
Thank you. Here's what really makes you look beautiful. And women will be on to a great principle when they learn this. That it's not what they do externally to themselves, like Peter mentions, what you do to your hair, or the jewelry you might wear, or your apparel. But that's not where true beauty lies. Peter's not condemning a balanced use of those things, and that's just brought out by the expression "not this but that," and that's used all over the scriptures. Not but the not is not an absolute. It's simply qualified by the but. The but part brings out what the emphasis, you might say, what the emphasis is to be in the comparison. So women are wise when they catch on to this. Okay, what really makes me beautiful is not what I do externally. But it's what qualities? What does Peter say? What qualities really make you beautiful? Very good. Or meekness and a quiet spirit. This is precious in the sight of God. By the way, is it precious in the sight of our culture? No. I only bring it out so that we look at that very obviously, because it has an effect on us. It pulls us. We do want, you know, society's approval. And just recognize right now, if you're a Christian woman, this is not what they're going to find valuable. And in fact, instead of appreciating you for these qualities, they're going to depreciate you. You're going to say, oh, what a weak, you know, what a weak creature you are, you know. And you've allowed man to just rule over you and suppress you and to put you down and treat you, you know, worthlessly. Well, yep, some men do that, and they're sinning, and they'll give an account to God for that kind of treatment of women. But no, this is precious in the sight of God. And with all of our behavior and all of our values, by faith, you need to make this your priority. What does God think highly of? And that's what's going to matter most to me. And that has to rule us in every area. So, here's what makes you look beautiful. A gentle or meek and quiet spirit. This is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves. That's how they adorned themselves. I thought they adorned themselves with using, I'm told, some charcoal, rubbing it as eyeshadow, you know, charcoal here. What do they use for rouge? You happen to know? What kind of dark, deep, dark red stuff did they find around?
Berries.
Maybe it's berry stain. What, Mary Lee?
I said berries and some leaves.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, that's not what it says. So, how did they used to adorn themselves with this kind of attitude? And the expression that follows in verse 5, being submissive to their own husbands. That makes you beautiful. Someone read verse 6. Sarah as an example. Okay, Brother Ken.
Just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear.
Okay. Sarah obeyed Abraham. So there's your synonym for basic submission, being subject to or submissive to. Obeyed Abraham. Even referring to him with what term?
Lord.
Lord. Calling him God? Does Lord mean God? I used to think so as a kid. You know, we say it so often in connection with God that we just think it's a word for God. It means what?
Master.
Okay. And you have become her children. Children of Sarah is what he's saying. Just like we talk about sons of Abraham. Here's who act like Abraham, have the faith of Abraham. Here's children of Sarah, daughters of Sarah, who emulate the same attitude she had. If they do what is right without being frightened by any fear. Notice again that right conduct of verse 2. Chaste and behavior with fear. This fear of God. And they're doing what's right in all situations. So to what degree did Sarah show respect? This really bears out this last point I have on the chart. She is to respect her husband, back in Ephesians 5. And to what degree did Sarah show respect to her husband? Even doing what?
Calling him Lord.
Right. How many of you wives call your husbands Lord? Yeah, I don't need a show of hands. That's what I thought. How many of us husbands demand that your wives call you Lord? How many of you? Yeah, you're pretty wise too. So we find this unusual. We find it unusual. But it is not unscriptural. The scriptures reveal it. It is not out of line. Wow. Now here's what I would like for you wives to think about. That whether or not you call your husbands Lord, and you not do it, we just know. So whether or not you do it, you should view him as though you could call him that. You should view him. You should treat him as though you do. And that would be amazing. And that would actually be transforming in your relationship if you find it a struggle type of one. If there's always tension, as it were. In fact, by the way, if you were to literally call your husband Lord these days, he's going to think you're being sarcastic and he's liable to just really get angry at you then. Lord Billy, you know. Lord Bob. But think about, again, viewing your husband as though you could use this term. Again, very seriously, the point is very respectfully. And that's what Sarah did. It's not that Abraham required it. There's nothing in the text saying that. It's simply that is how she responded to him. That's how she naturally viewed him and even referred to him. Usually, the term is found, usually it's not this, in quotes, Lord Abraham. What is it we do find in Scripture? What actual words would be recorded? Would you like me to do this? What? My Lord. Right. And we actually read that in Scripture. My Lord. Would you like this? Would you like that? My Lord, should we do this? And I even find occasions where they started the term my Lord and then were actually reasoning with him. My Lord, shouldn't we? My Lord, if the Lord wanted you to do this, wouldn't you? So even in a reasoning kind of a session, they would address the husband as my Lord. And yeah, that is fitting. It's not our culture, I understand. And I'm not saying that we need to start it necessarily. But neither was there a good reason for stopping it, the best I can tell. It did fade out of use. So have a lot of other practices that have good significance to them. So I'm just being open to it. I'm not going to require it, but I'm open to the good. At least I'm suggesting you consider the attitude that it would have to refer to your husband this way. Treat him as though you could call him my Lord. And then you wouldn't have to actually use the term. Any comments on this and on Sarah's view of Abraham? Turn back to Ephesians 5 and we'll wrap this up. So again, the key that we saw at 1 Peter 3, if you're going to win your unbelieving husband, the best opportunity in doing that is your behavior. So again, live out your faith consistently. Show him the right relationship. Do everything that you can. Render unto your husband, the things that are your husband's, and render unto God the things that are God. A takeoff of Jesus' statement, render to Caesar and render to God. Render to your husband all that you should and can, and then to God, and let him see that very, very clearly and consistently. And you can make this best appeal to him. Even if he doesn't obey the word, you make the best appeal for him to let you obey the word. Ephesians 5, and Paul concludes with this. So I'm going to read verse 33, the very last verse of the chapter. 33. Merely.
Nevertheless, each individual among you also is to love his own wife even as himself, and the wife must see to it that she respects her husband.
Thank you. So he hadn't mentioned that respect earlier, simply submission. But he concludes and adds that to the woman's view of the husband. See to it that she respect her husband. I've read some things, some good helpful advice about a husband and wife relationship. And here's what I find in most cases, that what the husband wants most in the relationship is this. It's not bacon every morning at breakfast. And homemade biscuits Although I could really get used to all, you know, that. I love her biscuits whenever she makes it. That's not what I want most. So what the husband wants most in the relationship is respect. And what the wife wants most is what? It's what God is asking for here. You know what she wants most? What?
To be loved.
To, you will even add, feel loved by the husband. To feel like she is this main object of his desire and interest. And that he's showing that. No one else like you, honey. And even nothing else of my time and interest. Nothing else. You know, you primarily. That's what she's wanting. She wants to feel like, the fairy tale, Sleeping Beauty. So she's Sleeping Beauty, and he's the one, Prince Charming, you know, that finds her, and he wants no one else, you know, just her. And his kiss wakes her up, you know, she gets to live from that. So that's what she wants. What he wants is respect from her. Marilee mentioned it early. A lot of husbands labor under insecurity, just feeling like, man, I can't do it right, can't do enough, not sure I can handle all of my responsibilities. And a wife can either let him know, yeah, you can't do it, you're not doing a good job, and I don't see you doing any better. You know, and so he stays kind of put down by that kind of view. Versus what a wife can do for him by saying, man, honey, I appreciate what you do. I appreciate, by the way, that you learned how to change the oil. I know when we first married, you didn't have a clue where the oil pan was. I'm just giving a for instance. You don't have to change your oil, but you should. No, you don't have to, but you should. You didn't know where the oil plug was. In fact, I forget which. So a member of the church got excited that I changed my own oil. Really, Tim? You change your own oil? There's all these quick lubes. And they're even cheaper than you can buy the oil at Walmart. Maybe. I don't know about that. And I just said, well, I always did it, so I always do. So he started changing his oil. And the first time he did it, he drained the transmission. Okay. And so we got under there and showed him which of the two plugs. And then either the second time or the third time, he left the oil fill cap off the top. After he filled the oil, he left it off. And he drove it around till the light came on, till a low light. And they opened the hood and it was oil everywhere, you know, sprayed up under it. But after all of that, he's got it down. And so, and what I'm getting at is,
what did the wife say about all this?
Oh, she did not appreciate me. She did. After that sprayed oil thing, Tim, I wish you'd never got him to be changing his oil. We were doing just fine at the quick lube. But the wife that says, "Honey, I knew you didn't come with, you know, these little knacks, but you've learned how to repair the leaking toilet, you know, how to change out a circuit breaker." All my point is, when she compliments him, she's showing faith in him, and he does better. And when she treats him with respect, he does better. And so there is wisdom in God's arrangement and in this, the duties that God is assigning to each. Next week, we pick on the husbands. So I know all these women are going to come back for that one. See, I wish Laura had been here for this one, for the last two. What I wish I'd done also was kind of skipped ahead and covered husbands right now while she's away.
Is she going to be here next Wednesday?
I'm afraid. So I wish I'd covered husbands for then. All right. Thank you, brethren.